hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring them. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They have to be my views and the views of our guest, and our guest this afternoon is Keith Thompson. We're going to be talking about his book, Leaving the Left, Moments in the News That Made Me Ashamed to Be a Liberal. Keith, thanks so very much for being back with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you just pick up the story and run with it?
Well, I wrote a book. In fact, my book is just out. As you said, the title of the book is Leaving the Left, and the subtitle is Moments in the News That Made Me Ashamed to Be a Liberal. And the book is a personal chronicle as well as a political account, a political memoir, describing how describing my lifelong interest in politics and my passion for all things public and civic affairs. I grew up in a Midwest town that was, I hate to call it conservative, because while there certainly may have been conservatives there, there was, in fact, in my hometown in Ohio, there was a great deal of bigotry. It was a town where you could get in trouble just for being black or Catholic or Jewish. So I made an early decision as a young man that, partly because Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. famously said that it was time to judge people not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And so that was really my battle cry, if you will, for turning toward what at the time seemed a sensible approach to politics. Liberalism at the time, in the late 60s, early 70s, through the late 70s, seemed to stand for equal opportunity rather than to call for equal results. And there's a very big difference between the two, I'm sure you'd agree. And part of my chronicle is to describe the series of events in the news that caused me slowly and surely to realize that the left, the political left, has nothing in common with the classical liberal tradition that I embraced as a young man, that has enormous respect for the rights and responsibility of individuals.
Well, I certainly sympathize, and of course, as many of our listeners know it, when my younger years, I was a liberal as well. And I was a liberal because I was indoctrinated with these philosophies in college and in high school, and it took a while before I could begin to see things clearly. So many people go through this, and certainly I believe we need to be idealistic. But we need to understand the limits of idealism and how best to implement the dream that you've expressed so well, that day when all men will be known not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. A beautiful statement. Well, anyway, why don't you just go up and let's go through some of the things that really did touch you and begin to have you begin taking a second look at what was going on.
Well, for me, one of the turning points was the regime of affirmative action and racial preferences. Again, I was influenced as a young man by Dr. King. Let's judge people not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Now, let's also say that America had not done right on the issue of race. You know, slavery is wrong. It is evil. I would say, of course, that every civilization in the history of this planet has practiced slavery. So it is not an American invention. And in fact, the American contribution to slavery should be seen as, frankly, abolition. Because while we were not the first society to practice slavery, we were one of the first societies to end it. I mean, the abolitionist movement was what is truly historically relevant about slavery, but it doesn't, and America's contribution to that, I might add, by people of faith, the abolition movement was chiefly comprised of people who acted on the basis of their religious faith.
Amen.
But let's not try to paper over that slavery was wrong and that racism was wrong and that Jim Crow laws were wrong. But the idea of remedying that by instituting...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web 24 hours a day at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091.
Good morning, honey.
Wow, the weather is beautiful, the cabin is terrific, and it's the first day of our vacation.
Yeah.
Honey, is there something wrong?
Yeah, I just realized we forgot to pack the travel Berkey system. I can't drink this cabin water. And what am I going to do when I'm out on the lake? Now the whole vacation is ruined.
Honey, cheer up. I brought our Sport Berkey purifiers.
What?
Yeah, I know you're picky about not having pathogenic bacteria, organic chemicals, heavy metals or foul tastes and odors in the water, so I packed our Sport Berkey purifiers.
You know, this is a terrific cabin, and wow, have you noticed the beautiful weather?
Don't ruin your vacation. Get a travel Berkey today for only $209, or get a Sport Berkey for only $39. Call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Travel Berkey not available in Iowa.
Imagine living truly debt-free. No credit card debt, no car payments, no mortgage, just your daily living expenses. And you can do this with just the money you already make. I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth program. I did it, and so have nearly a 500,000 others using my proven system.
I'm completely debt-free now, thanks to John Commuta.
I will be able to pay off my house in approximately 2.5 years on a 30-year mortgage.
It works no matter how much debt you have. My system doesn't consolidate your debt, it eliminates it. It's easy, risk-free, and works with any income level.
And once we got on the system, we were able to eliminate about 90% of our debt.
I never have to worry about who's calling me or who's knocking on my door.
Call now and I'll rush you a free tape that will show you the power of my proven system. 1-800-400-8498. 1-800-400-8498. That's 1-800-400-8498.
Stand back here at the Tennessee Communication Network. I guess it's Keith Thompson. His book is Leaving the Left, and he's talking about race and race issues. And certainly, I don't think anybody would be proud of the Jim Crow laws that existed in the South. But, of course, things were changing. They weren't changing as rapidly as we'd certainly like to them have, but certainly in many of the states in the North and in California and even some of the southern states where these Jim Crow laws, these really unjust laws, were being gradually eroded away. So you pick up the story there, please.
Sure. Let's talk about affirmative action, because that was one of the turning points for me when I began to question the way the left was no longer seeming to be consistent with what I called classical liberalism. The case was the Regents of the University of California versus Bakke. It was the first Supreme Court decision to directly address affirmative action in education in this country. Bakke involved the admissions program of the University of California at Davis's Medical School. Student applicants had to have a minimum 2.5 grade point average, and only one in six, I recall, only one in six who met the minimum standard was chosen for an interview. So applicants were given a total admission score that included their overall grade point average and their grade point average for science courses, their graded interview score, and their test scores. So there was a separate admissions program run by a special admissions commission for minority group applicants where the 2.5 grade point average did not apply. And that was really what was at debate here. An applicant named Alan Bakke, a white male, applied to the medical school in 1973. His combined score was 468 out of 500. but he was denied admission because it was late in the year, and the admissions program had ruled that any applicant who scored below 470, I believe it was, would be refused. He applied again the following year. His application was early. He did well, and nevertheless, he was rejected. So the issue before the court was whether the special admissions program violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. In 1978, in June 28, there was a two-part ruling. The Supreme Court ordered Bakke admitted to the University of California Medical School, but the Supreme Court did not eliminate the concept of affirmative action altogether. And this is where this is the key. The court ruled that colleges and universities, and by inference, employers, may take race and ethnicity into consideration as one of a number of factors. And so we had what many people call reverse discrimination, and you can see that this is certainly not consistent with the idea of judging each individual on their merits.
And I think the big issue was that there were a lot of people who were minority race or women, you know, that certainly were let in, where somebody was far superior as far as his ability, as far as his grade point, you know, was kept out because he was white. And that was really a very, very interesting decision. I remember it very, very well. And Bakke actually won the case, got in medical school, and went off into medical practice. But, you know, the thing is, the idea that you would discriminate against somebody because they were white is just as abhorrent as you'd be discriminated against somebody because they were black. And certainly it was that inconsistency then that really did begin to alarm you, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And I think you could say the civil rights community, the civil rights establishment after King, I think made a crucial decision that has hampered the progress of black Americans as a group ever since. After the 1964 Civil Rights Act and after the 1965 Voting Rights Act, when the restrictions, the prohibitions against black people were lifted, in which equal opportunity was, in fact, the law of the land, the civil rights establishment had a choice, and the choice was between, do we now focus on doing what is necessary to educate black people, to train black people, to instill in black people, our people, a sense of membership and patriotism and that the American dream can be open to them, or do we go down another road? Do we go down the road of saying, let's hold America liable for its past transgressions? Let us emphasize white guilt. Let us call not for equal opportunity, let's call for equal outcomes and equal results. And so you have what I think was the tragic effect, whereby the pioneers who fought, who expended their moral energy in the civil rights battles to ensure freedom for black people in this country, we found the spectacle 40 years later of their sons and daughters and grandchildren, in many cases, expending their moral energy to argue with all of their passion that they cannot compete on standardized paper and pencil tests without racial preferences. And to me, that is deeply insulting to black people, and it's got to instill in many black individuals a sense of inferiority, that they're expected to require these preferences to compete in American life at this time in our history.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and of course there's some people who have been exploiting that, your point that you made last night about Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and these others, professional people out there just doing everything they can to really stir up racial animosity and try to unite the blacks against the whites, and by so doing tend to unite the whites against the blacks. I mean, this is totally counterproductive to a free and prosperous society.
Well, I would say that I totally agree. In fact, you know, my early sense of estrangement from the left actually occurred to me in moments of humor. And one of the times, I found myself beginning to laugh at much of what the left was saying, and Jesse Jackson was right at the top for me. Here we have a highly successful, and I mean materially speaking, as well as in his terms of the prestige he holds in the country. He's successful, he's wealthy, he's accomplished. He's in many ways made it, you know, like very few people have, to the very top of our society. Here's a guy who spends his days flying around the nation in private jets, in fact, raiding corporate America in the name of the poor, threatening to file lawsuits against corporations because of alleged group-based discrimination and racism, even as he enriches himself and all his cohorts. And yet he has the audacity to make a statement in recent years like this. Jesse Jackson said, "I may be well-dressed, but I am still oppressed." So here you have just the most shameless kind of playing on this victim psychology that Jesse Jackson himself tells us that he is still oppressed, even though he is well-dressed. I think you've got people of good faith in this country, white people, people of all races, who are beginning to say, you know, we understand that what happened in our history was wrong, Jim Crow and slavery, but we are not going to be susceptible to these plays on white guilt and to the guilt of the country. It's wrong to take that road, and that was one of my realizations, Dr. Stan.
Well, I think it was a very good one. Certainly, Ward Connerly as a black man on the Board of Regents of the University of California, and getting through legislation here in California to really do away with affirmative action, I really applaud him for it. And I think it's so vitally important that we all are in this together. And it behooves each of us, you know, to treat every other person with respect, certainly not judging them based upon their color or a gender. So, anyway, but there are a number of other things that you point out that really were sort of red flags to you and began to give you that sort of disquieting feeling. Among them was this issue of abortion, and I thought your remarks on that were so pointed and so right to the point.
Yes, let me say that when Roe versus Wade was decided, I was in my early 20s, and I did not read the decision at the time, but it seemed to have a coherence to it. It seemed to have a logic to it, that the justices would establish a trimester system, arguing that abortions in the early stage would be certainly far different than late-term abortions and this attempt to establish viability as a criterion. But I was also quite susceptible and quite open to the sort of seemingly to a libertarian argument that a woman had the right to choose what to do with her own body. And over time, in fact, I have to say, I marched in some pro-choice demonstrations. It seemed to me to be an important issue. But over time, my views on this issue changed as I began to acknowledge the disquiet I felt in myself. And the turning point for me was was watching C-SPAN. I'm pretty much of a political junkie, and I enjoy a lot of the coverage on C-SPAN. I watched coverage some years ago, not long ago, of a United States Senate debate on the subject of partial birth abortion, which I now believe is a euphemism for infanticide. I think we've just got to call it what it is. The debate was between Senator Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania, who, as you know, is a strong supporter of the life pro-life position, and Senator Frank Lautenberg of New Jersey, a strong supporter of the pro-choice position. The debate went like this. Senator Santorum turned to Senator Lautenberg, and as they were discussing partial birth abortion, Senator Santorum said, "Senator, if the baby was delivered accidentally and the head slipped out, would you allow the doctor to kill the baby?" I was struck. What a powerful question. How direct, how simple. Senator Lautenberg turned on his heels and said, Senator Santorum, I am not making the decision. I couldn't believe my ears. We're talking about a live birth of a human infant. It was not supposed to be born. It was supposed to be aborted. It was supposed to be killed, but it was born. That's the premise of the question. I'm not making the decision. Well, Senator Feingold wanted in on the debate. He's another pro-choice senator, and so Senator Santorum raised the same question once again. Senator, let me ask your view, Senator Feingold. If the baby was delivered accidentally and the head slipped out, would you allow the doctor to kill the baby on the spot? Senator Feingold said, "Now, Senator, it is up to the doctor and the mother." And so, Dr. Stan, I listened to that. I played it back on my VCR, and I realized that that the pro-choice movement had frankly become a cult of death. If they couldn't make a distinction, arguably you can make a distinction between early trimesters. I mean, that's open for perhaps debate. I don't happen to think so. But the idea that a late-term abortion and a live child born, and you say, well, that's not my decision. United States senators are called upon to make moral decisions every day. So I was appalled by that, and it got me to rethink the issue, and there's simply no doubt biologically that a fertilized embryo is not a potential human being with second-class citizenship rights. All that last part, of course, is arguable politically. But there is no doubt a fertilized embryo is a human being, and it grows inside the mother. And so the final point for me, Dr. Stan, was the libertarian issue. What about the woman? What about her property? What about her access to her own body? What about her suitability to be a mother?
All right, you hold that. We'll get to that as soon as we get back right here at Genesis.
Ted Anderson from Midas. Today is October 27, 2006. Gold opened at $598.40, and 1 ounce gold coins can be purchased for $624.64. Again, that's $624.64 to purchase 1 ounce gold coins. Do you ever wonder why deficit spending never goes away? Would you believe me if I told you that fiscal responsibility would lead to a second Great Depression? Believe it or not, this is true. Our economy gets its currency from a private banking cartel. We, the people, labor to create the money only to turn it over to this institution for its seal of approval. They, in turn, lend it back to us, and we, the people, are forced to labor to service the interest on this debt. Midas Resources is offering the creature from Jekyll Island a second look at the Federal Reserve. Call 800-686-2237. If you haven't read this book, get a copy today. 800-686-2237. If you have, pick up a copy for your friend or relative. Call 1-800-686-2237.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the incredible Berkey Solar Charger, your source for free solar electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey Solar Charger for only $75 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes Scholarship, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
If you're tired of spending a small fortune every time you fill up, now you can do something about it. Ethos FR, a product used all over the world, has reported savings of up to 19% on gas and even reduced emissions of up to 30%. Ethos FR is easy to use and works with any kind of fuel, including gasoline, diesel, and ethanol. Ethos FR works by reformulating the gas in your tank to burn more completely, resulting in a cleaner engine, better mileage, more power, and fewer emissions. So visit ctsafegas.com and start saving today. That's ctsafegas.com.
Are your Federal Reserve notes looking for a safe haven? Mine found it in precious metals. Not paper promises, but actual gold in my possession. It is liquid, it is private, it owes no one, it cannot go bankrupt, and it maintains its purchasing power. Find your answer at Midas Resources. That's 1-800-686-2237. The answer is at 1-800-686-2237.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is Keith Thompson. He's talking about his book entitled Leaving the Left, Moments in the News That Made Me Ashamed to Be a Liberal. And we were talking about, of course, the libertarian view of abortion. And that is that a woman should have a right to do what she wants to with her own body. And that is really a very, very appealing argument. But And pick up the story there, please, Keith.
Yes. The question for me was, you know, who is to decide the fate of a fetus in the womb of a woman who claims autonomy? And the question that I was wrestling with, based on my liberal assumptions and my sort of left-of-center assumptions, you know, is not abortion fundamentally a freedom issue, a matter of, you know, inalienable rights as set forth in the Declaration of Independence? And the answer to that was yes at the time. My answer to that is yes today, but now my thoughts and sympathies ally with the smallest humans. That is to say, the fetus, the baby in the process of being nurtured in the womb, who escaped the attention of Senator Lautenberg and Feingold. Because the founders of this country understood nothing so clearly as this: our rights are not granted by government. Rather, the duty of government is to secure the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so, in a fundamental sense, our inalienable rights are pre-political. And so, I've come to believe that the right of the child to be in the womb must be protected, and that the mother's right to the autonomy of her being stops, frankly, where that baby's welfare and well-being are concerned. This is the way nature, or God, nature and God, created having a child. I'm not sure, might have been a better way in another universe. But in this universe, the infant relies on the hospitality and the lack of cruelty and the lack of aggression, frankly, on the part of the mother and on the part of society.
I agree with you totally, and I think this is really such an important issue, and that is this whole idea upon which our way of government was based, and that is the Declaration of Independence, that held that there was a creator, and that certainly our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness came from that creator, and governments were instituted among men to preserve those God-given rights, as it were. And whatever your belief in God is, and as you probably suspect, I'm an evangelical Christian, but whatever your belief in God is, it is that understanding which is the very foundation upon which this country rests, and certainly our founding fathers, with very, very few exceptions. I think they all believed in God, but except for one agnostic. Even Benjamin Franklin, who was certainly not a Christian, believed in God, and Thomas Jefferson did as well. So, you know, the idea that we can suddenly completely ignore that and say, well, it's really up to the woman, totally then ignoring the rights of the unborn child. So I think that's such an important issue, and it still divides the right and the left, the Democrat and Republicans, so much today.
Yes, it does. And a related issue for me, just 2 years ago, maybe a little over 1 year, was the Terri Schiavo case. You know, I had been an advocate, I guess, of death with dignity, in the sense that the phrase was kind of hard to argue with, similar to the surface appeal of right to choose. I mean, right to choose corresponds to the American ideal of freedom and leave me alone. So on the surface, it's a very popular phrase, and it corresponds, it's in sync with that deep American idea. Well, likewise, death with dignity. Well, what are you going to be in favor of, death with no dignity? So the idea of people having the right to decide when to end their lives, again, these are difficult decisions, but I was among those who took a pretty much live and let live, and if someone chooses to die, that's their choice. Kind of like universal health care has a nice appeal to it before you scratch the surface. Well, like all Americans, I paid attention to the Terri Schiavo case because I didn't have any really alternative if I was paying attention to the media at all. And I watched and I listened. I'm a reporter, I'm a journalist, and I looked at the background of the case. I know that Michael Schiavo had said on the record, her husband, I will not turn Terri over to her parents because I don't want to. That's what he said. Now, at times he said Terri, you know, didn't want to live in that state. But then on another occasion he said, I don't know what Terri wanted, but this is not what we want, meaning he and his wife and so forth. Now, the point in bringing this up seemed to me wrong, fundamentally wrong, to put Terri Schiavo to death absent clear and convincing evidence that this was her wish. And that was precisely what was missing, that kind of clear and convincing evidence, partly because Michael Schiavo himself had said what he'd said. And here we had Terri Schiavo's parents, brother and sister, who said, we'll take our family member, we'll take Terri with us. Well, under Florida statutes, Dr. Stan, as you know, Terri had no right to live. That was under Florida statutes through that process. But Florida statutes, like any other statutes, are trumped by constitutional constitutional amendments, and I'd be glad to discuss that when we come back.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment. Our guest is Mr. Keith Thompson. His book is Leaving the Left, Moments in the News That Made Me Ashamed to Be a Liberal.
This broadcast is available on MP3 CD format at GCNLive.com or call toll-free 877-300-7645.
Hello, this is Amy Bjorklund. Thanks to a quantum leap in garlic research, the health benefits of 20 fresh garlic cloves are now available in one tiny capsule. With stabilized allicins, the proven power of garlic has been transformed into what is perhaps the most important medicinal product ever developed. And there's no odor. Stabilized allicin gives you and your family a safe, natural weapon that kills harmful bacteria, viruses, and funguses, all without harming the friendly bacteria in the digestive tract. This means strong immunity, fewer and shorter colds, and the best possible protection from deadly diseases, none of which prescription drugs can offer. What's more, this product can deter mosquitoes from biting you and safely keep fleas and ticks off your pets. Visit truthandexcellence.com, click the Truth and Excellence banner on GCNLive.com, or call me, Amy Bjorklund, personally at 805-595-2711. 805-595-2711.
The Berkey Security Pack is your one-stop solution for unexpected emergencies. It provides you with purified water, light, power, and communications ability. The Security Pack includes a Berkey Light water purifier, an LED base, two Berkey Sport filtration bottles, the Berkey battery adapter, the Berkey MP solar charger, as well as a backup set of two Black Berkey purification elements. The Berkey Security Pack is important every day and a must during emergencies because it provides purified water, long-term low-energy lighting, backup battery power for your Berkey LEDs, free long-term solar power for communications devices such as radios, walkie-talkies, and cell phones, as well as power for small applications. Get the one-stop solution for your emergency and everyday needs. The Berkey Security Pack, a retail value of $518 for only $399 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Not yet available in Iowa.
For years, you've been hearing about Herbal Healer Academy and how it's remained the leader in effective, alternative, and natural medicine and education. But how can they continue to hold that title for years on end? The answer is high quality and huge selection. Just visit herbalhealer.com and shop online or request a free catalog. You're bound to find the alternative you're looking for. Did you know that Herbal Healer carries the latest, safest, and effective weight loss products? You can also count on Herbal Healer for the largest selection of safe and natural supplements just for children. And don't forget your pets. Herbal Healer even has natural mineral supplements for all your animals, including horses, cows, and birds. Take a peek at their online calendar, and you're sure to find everything you need and maybe something you didn't realize you needed. Visit HerbalHealer.com and don't forget to sign up for the free Herbal Healer newsletter. HerbalHealer.com, working with the power of nature.
Known as Keith Thompson, we're talking about his book, Leaving the Left. We were talking about Terri Schiavo. And those of you who remember her death, you remember that we talked about this day after day after day on television, and then they would show these pictures of Terri. Now, she was, of course, at this time being dehydrated, and her cheeks were sunken. I know people were actually there looking into the window, and she looked ashen gray, and she was just so miserable because she was being starved to death and simply dehydrated in an effort to kill her. And yet, when we watched television, the pictures we saw, the pictures had been shot months or years beforehand, and she looked so healthy, and she looked so peaceful, and you have to understand that they were playing games with our minds. Now, I've talked to people who had actually had this scientist go in and go over, and they said there was no question. She was not in a permanent vegetative state. She was aware of her surroundings, and she would follow people in the room with her eyes. She was not persistent vegetative, but her husband wanted to kill her. Because, of course, he had been living with this other woman, had two children by them. There was a lot of money at stake. But the media was simply giving all the reasons why we should go ahead and allow Terri to be killed. It was murder. And what was so interesting was how they used those pictures on television to give us the idea. It was such a peaceful way for her to die. She was so peaceful. She was being starved to death. Is that a peaceful way to go? Will you pick up the story there, Keith? Because I know you were very much moved by this, the outcome of this.
Yes, and as I was saying before we went to break, the under Florida statutes, if you're simply going to follow Florida statutes, she, if you will, had her day in court. Hearing after hearing, court after court, lots of court hearings. You could say in one sense that it was thoroughly adjudicated, and Florida statutes had determined she had no right to live. But that negates the fact, or is, in my view, was negated by the fact that there is a constitution. And the Constitution precedes the statutes. And the state of California, the state of Florida, I should say, the relevant constitutional passage reads, "All natural persons, female and male alike, are equal before the law and have inalienable rights, among which are the right to enjoy and defend life and liberty." Now, Terri Schiavo had a natural right to live in this sense. She had committed no crime. She had forfeited none of her natural rights, and yet she was put to death in a way that we wouldn't allow in most states and provinces and regions of this country an animal to be put to death. And so what this conjured for me was a rethinking of the whole question of euthanasia and physician-assisted suicide. I looked closely into the practice of physician-assisted suicide in Europe, and found a great deal of evidence that as this practice has become more a part of Dutch society, there's evidence that doctors have tried to coerce parents to take their lives, wives have coerced husbands, and husbands have coerced their wives. There's a great many flagrant abuses of this practice because the older people say in Europe that they are feeling a great deal of pressure, you know, to move it along. You're becoming inconvenient. And this act of physician-assisted suicide is framed as brave and wise and progressive. The bottom line, Dr. Stan, is that we're seeing a cheapening of life. We're seeing a definition of life is that it's okay to have life if it's instrumental to something else. And I would say the worst voice in this now in our culture is Dr. Peter Singer, a professor of ethics at Princeton, who has argued that parents of a severely disabled baby should have the right to kill that baby for up to 30 days after the child's birth, because the baby up to 30 days is still a life, but it's not, strictly speaking, a person. And this is the slippery slope we go down when euthanasia and when we kill for convenience is what it comes down to.
Well, you know, I really think it has to do with the worldview. And one of the hardest things for me initially to understand is that there's certain people who look at the world one way and certain people who look at the world through the other, another perspective. And it really has in large part to do with, I believe, how we feel about God. And either human life is important as far as abortion, euthanasia, or it isn't important. And to the liberal who is utilitarian and doesn't believe in God or believe that they're answerable to anybody for what they do, why, after all, wouldn't it be better to put the older out of it? They're going to have to die one day, and suddenly there's such a drain on society. Or somebody like Terri Schiavo, it's a tragic case, and we could just remove that tragedy by just killing them. And unfortunately, there really are people in our society who have a different worldview. Do you agree with that concept?
Well, I agree that is, in fact, people do have a utilitarian view, and that is widespread. You know, Professor Singer at Princeton was asked very directly in an interview, what about parents conceiving and giving birth to a child specifically to kill him, take his organs and transplant them into one of their older children? That's what a reporter asked Singer. And Singer responded, quote, "They're not doing something intrinsically wrong in itself." And he was asked, is there anything wrong with a society in which children are bred for spare parts on a massive scale? He said, no. And so now, to their credit, a lot of students and the faculty at Princeton protested his hiring. because he didn't, in fact, there was a protest movement that declared, "We protest his hiring because Dr. Singer denies the intrinsic moral worth of an entire class of human beings, newborn children, and promotes policies that would deprive many infants with disabilities of their basic human right to legal protection against homicide." If we have a moment, I don't know how much time we have before we go to the next break, but I'll tell you the real irony of this case.
You go right ahead.
When Peter Singer's own mother had Alzheimer's disease and was suffering from dementia, he and his brothers and sisters decided not to put her down, even though she met the same criteria that he had said you should, to reduce the suffering of the greatest number of people. So he was pressed about this apparent contradiction, and Peter Singer said, "Well, I think this has made me see how the issues of someone with these kinds of problems are really very difficult. Perhaps it's more difficult than I thought before, because it is different when it's your mother." Well, that kind of comes close, Dr. Singer, but the difference when the sufferer is your mother is that you love her, and it is the love that opens your eyes to the true worth of other persons. You know, their inner preciousness, their unrepeatability, that no person can be repeated twice, in their uniqueness. And I think it's precisely a glimpse of that unrepeatable uniqueness of another human being that inspires love. And so I have to say I congratulate Dr. Singer for not killing his mother. I just wish he would think through the implications of his philosophy.
Well, I think so, too. Well, there's so many things on the left that are really very, very difficult to justify. And, of course, one of the things that we're seeing today, is that what's going on in Iraq, the attitude towards torture. The trouble is, it seems to be that the conservatives now are embracing torture and war, whereas in the past it has always been the liberals that did it.
Well, I have to say, I think we've got to be able to use methods that are sometimes tough and sometimes to get confessions. But I agree. What we would certainly call torture in the classic sense is not something that we can morally justify from a Judeo-Christian and even in a civilized secular perspective. Certain acts that are clearly defined as torture. First of all, they're not even shown to be productive. People often give information under duress that is not accurate. So I find myself sort of in the middle on this, in that I don't support torture, but I think that many people on the left now are simply wanting nothing less than a kind of negotiated surrender, and they want endless dialogue, and that's not going to work with Islamist fanatics.
No, I'm sure it's not. Well, anyway, we could open a whole can of worms as far as getting into what's going on over in Iraq today. But let's get back to Vietnam, because, of course, this was a place where you already got started. You actually worked for Senator Metzenbaum. You were out marching against the Vietnam War. And the trouble is that, in many respects, I feel that you are absolutely right. We never should have gone into Vietnam with a phony Gulf of Tonkin incident. Nobody has ever been held responsible for the 58,000 American boys who died there, really for nothing. And of course, when we pulled out, then we destabilized the area and led to the bloodbath in Cambodia. When we get involved with other countries throughout the world, so often instead of helping, we seem to make things worse. And I'm not really certain it should be the function of our government to try to be the policeman of the world.
Well, I agree with that. I think we can't do it. It's not possible to do nation building at that scale. And certainly I think it looks like history is going to record that the mistakes we've made in Iraq certainly include the after the invasion, after bringing Saddam's regime down, the systematic dismantling of their police force and their civic structure, their infrastructure, if you will. This is a culture that had not yet attained the same degree of individuation, if you will. And so to take away their tribal, their civic, and their police force, their military, to dash that as we did, well, as Colin Powell said about Iraq, if you break it, you buy it. Well, we broke Iraq, but it looks like we're paying the price now, because the fragmentation that we set in place We should never have dismantled the police force. We should have gotten them to maintain the order, the civic order that's so crucial.
Amen to that. We sort of have to ask how we could have such brilliant people as Paul Bremer be so foolish unintentionally. Well, be that as it may, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or I should say, I'm sorry, giving you the wrong number, it's 1-800-259-5791 for this hour. 1-800-259-5791 if you have a question or comment for our guest, Keith Thompson, and his book, Leaving the Left. And before I go on, how can people get your book, and what about your website? Do you have a website you'd like to get out?
I do. I have a website which is the same title as the book, leavingtheleft.com, www.leavingtheleft.com. That has a description of the book and as well a link to Amazon.com. You can get it through my site through that link or go to Amazon directly. And it seems to be showing up in bookstores around the country. The big book chains are carrying it, and a lot of the independent chains are carrying it as well.
Well, I hope you do very well with it. It's a good read, and it has a lot of very, very valid points in there, and things that I think we really have to look at, and look at it objectively in this dialogue between conservative, liberal, right, left, a Republican, Democrat, because sometimes I really feel that we're being manipulated into, of course, arguing back and forth and never seeing the forest for the trees.
Yes, and let me just use that to segue into another one of the turning points for me, and that was the nomination of Clarence Thomas to be a justice of the Supreme Court. Now, at the time, I was no longer an activist in politics. I had segued into journalism. And when President Bush the First announced that Clarence Thomas was the most qualified man in America for the job, I think I shared the bemusement of a lot of people that said, well, come on. Maybe not the most qualified, but the point is that isn't what matters. You could argue with that kind of a ritualistic statement. You know, most presidents always do say they choose the most qualified. And certainly I would have to say he was qualified because he had already made it to the appeals court, to the appellate level. But here's the issue. Here's the issue for me as a liberal. I watched the civil rights establishment and the feminist establishment pull do everything they possibly could, no matter how mean-spirited, to bring this man down, including saying that Clarence Thomas does not deserve to. This is black leaders in the civil rights movement. Clarence Thomas does not deserve to sit on the Supreme Court because he doesn't think like a black man. He was accused of thinking like a white man. He was accused of being inauthentically black, not genuinely black. Well, first of all, we know that was simply a cover for the fact that they didn't like his conservative politics. He was against affirmative action. He was for advancement on the basis of merit. He had a strict constructionist, originalist view of the Constitution. Disagree with him on those things, fine. Challenge his legal philosophy. But the viciousness of saying he didn't think like a black man embarrassed me deeply, because these were people who I considered leaders on the civil rights frontier, and I was still convinced Martin Luther King was right. Let's judge people by the color of their character, if you will, not the color of their skin. And then when Anita Hill showed up at the 11th hour of the hearings with her report of something that had happened 10 years ago, some remark he had made that she found insulting, she called it sexual harassment. But you know, Dr. Stan, she followed him to another job. She took a new job with him. Now, I don't know too many people when they're sexually harassed who actually I know many people who are sexually harassed don't report it, but they very seldom take another job with that person and go to a whole new level. And that's what Anita Hill did.
But, of course, this whole thing was just an effort to prevent a conservative judge, one who was a constructionist who believed in the Constitution, to keep him off the courts, because, of course, the liberals have used the Supreme Court for years to circumvent the Constitution, which the judges swear to uphold. I mean, if you don't like our Constitution, then let's have an open discussion. Let's go ahead and amend it if you can get the support. They couldn't get the support to create their all-centralized, federalist, authoritarian society. So they had to do it by corrupting the courts, and that's exactly what they did. And that's what Clarence Thomas was really all about. Are we going to have a limited central government? Are we going to have an authoritarian central government like the liberal wants, so that we can address every single problem facing America today with a new series of federal laws?
Exactly. And I think what we see with the civil rights establishment now is basically a fundamental irrelevance. The civil rights movement was a necessary movement, just like abolition was a necessary movement. There are moments where people form spontaneously, and they generate movements to address large-scale social ills, and the civil rights movement was clearly directed toward that. But once blacks had been had attained full legal parity, then the challenge became, how do we make up for lost time? And let's admit that the black community did lose enormous opportunities. That community was retarded in its growth, if you will. But here's the great irony: it was retarded by racism. There's no doubt about that fact. But here's the deep tragedy: there was a robust black middle class in the United States in the 1950s. The black middle class was extremely robust in the 1950s. The church, the black church, was a powerful force. There was a deep faith and traditional values in the African American community. And the Great Society programs of Lyndon Johnson, we can now see, not only didn't solve poverty, but made poverty worse by demanding that welfare be based on, you can only get welfare payments if there's no adult male in the household.
Amen to that. Look, we're out of time. We could go on for another 2 hours, but unfortunately the hour has flown by. It's been awfully good talking to you, and I hope that we can get together again not too distant future. Thanks so much for being with us again.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Good morning, honey. Wow, the weather is beautiful, the cabin is terrific, and it's the first day of our vacation.
Yeah.
Honey, is there something wrong?
Yeah, I just realized we forgot to pack the travel Berkey system. I can't drink this cabin water. And what am I going to do when I'm out on the lake? Now the whole vacation is ruined.
Honey, cheer up. I brought our Sport Berkey purifiers.
What?
Yeah, I know you're picky about not having pathogenic bacteria, organic chemicals, heavy metals or foul tastes and odors in the water, so I packed our Sport Berkey purifiers.
You know, this is a terrific cabin. And wow, have you noticed the beautiful weather?
Don't ruin your vacation. Get a Travel Berkey today for only $209, or get a Sport Berkey for only $39. Call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Travel Berkey not available in Iowa.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at www.heartdrop.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
Well, this is Dr. Stan Brian back here with the Genesis Communication Network, and this is the time I have to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there and you listen to us and you think we have an important message and you want to see us stay where we are and hopefully one of these days be able to expand again, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters or get your best tapes of the month or CDs and newsletter. It's $20 a month or more, or you can subscribe to the newsletter or whatever you'd like to do to help. Under any circumstances, we'd love to hear from you. If you do not know our ministry, would like a free copy of our newsletter and don't have access to the computer, give us a call. We'll get you off one. If you'd like a catalog, we can send it to you. And we do have not only a regular catalog, we have a health products catalog, because we do carry a number of books and we carry various health products, things that you need, and a lot of the vitamins and minerals and things of that sort, natural antibiotics that we take to stay healthy. And I'll tell you, when I feel myself coming down with a cold, I take some of the various things that we have, and I will tell you, it usually snaps right out of it, so I can keep on going here. And believe me, with doing 5 hours talk radio a day, I can't be sick. So fortunately, my wife has all of these products, and you see the list of them. If you'd like to get the health catalog, we'd be glad to send you one, and hopefully you want to go ahead and get the products we carry. They're made by the finest provider of health food products in the country, but they're under our label because they do not allow private people to sell under their label unless we were actually a store. So we're under the RL label, and if you don't know, that stands for Radio Liberty. But, of course, there's so many things you need in the way of magnesium and calcium and selenium. If you certainly have not read the book, The Miracle of Magnesium, you need to get it. If you haven't read Russell Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, that's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, or Natural Strategies for Health for Cancer Patients. That's Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. You need that. We have a great new DVD put out by Dr. Blaylock on nutrition and behavior. Believe me, there are many, many people in mental institutions who would not be there if they were at proper nutrition. Certainly you can help people with postpartum depression with proper nutrition. So much of what happens to us is dependent upon proper nutrition. So the DVD, Nutrition and Behavior, and then we have a 4-tape set of my interviews with Dr. Blaylock, and we'll be having other products that he's beginning to put out available. We have a 4-tape set with Bill Sardi on vitamin C, and you really need to understand how vitally important vitamin C is to your health. And then, of course, certainly if you want the health catalog or get any of the items that we talk about, the book on statin drugs, or the 4-tape set on statin drugs, the material on water fluoridation, or on mercury, or certainly on aspartame and MSG. It's all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, as we've mentioned before, we would very much like to be able to reprint Dr. Cuddy's wonderful book, Secret Records Revealed. And, of course, many of his books are up on the Internet at $80 or $100 each. Secret Records Revealed has been out of print not too long, but we would offer you a full case of his books for $149.95 plus shipping. And then you can sell them, and you can sell them on the Internet or eBay or wherever you want to get hold of them, or just give them away. But it's a wonderful book. We've added an index. We've added, certainly, an epilogue. This is Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, Secret Records Revealed. So if you'd like to get a pre-publication offer of a full case of his books for $149.95 plus shipping, give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to go to our website at RadioLiberty.com to pray for America, to pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. We'll be back in just a moment here for the second hour of Radio Liberty.
Look
nuclear reactors provide economical energy, but would you be prepared during an accident? During nuclear disasters, great amounts of radioactive iodine are released into the atmosphere, which are then readily absorbed into the body. Medical Corps' potassium iodate gives you virtually complete protection from the most feared consequence of a nuclear accident, radioactive poisoning. Potassium iodate can protect against radioactive poisoning by filling the thyroid with good iodine. This shields the thyroid and prevents it from absorbing the harmful radioactive iodine. Potassium iodate is better than the iodide form because it is not as likely to cause upset stomachs in children, the elderly, the sick, and pets. Order the official potassium iodate for only $24 and save $5 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Call now and get free shipping. That's 888-803-4438.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They have to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have this. On the line, Andy Jacobson. She's written a book which we carry called Terror in the Skies. That's Terror in the Skies. We think it's fascinating to read about it, read about her experience on a flight, where, of course, she was on a flight and there were a number of Syrians on board. Maybe we can have her touch on that story. But there's so many more things that seem to be happening all the time, and Andy's on the front British lines of a lot of this. I got something the other day that was talking about some gentleman who was stopped, who actually had some various things that could be used for building a bomb, and he was let on the plane. What was that all about, Annie?
Well, you're talking about an incident that happened this summer in Houston Airport, and there was a man who had what can be considered bomb components that he was bringing on board with him on a plane. Most importantly, he had 9-volt batteries, and he had the content. He had his shoes hollowed out, which is really a lightning post for TSA screeners needing to say to themselves, "This is not someone who is a normal traveler."
Now, what do you mean by shoes hollowed out? How do they do that?
Well, there's been lots of plots in the past where bomb components get smuggled in inside the hollows of one's shoes. In other words, if you have a shoe with a little bit of a lifter on it, you know, even maybe a quarter of an inch or a half of an inch on your heel, then that area can be hollowed out and something can be put in it, which would then be undetected by screeners. That's what Ramzi Youssef did back in 1994 that allowed him to blow up Philippine Air Flight 434.
Now, of course, did this fellow actually have hollowed-out shoes?
He had hollowed-out shoes, and, of course, later he claimed that they were that was not done by him. Perhaps I think his suggestion was that they were secondhand shoes, and the person who had them on before him had done that. But, you know, you're always kind of seeing these kind of excuses from malified travelers. I report about them a lot. I reported recently on a Yemeni man who got on a Northwest flight from Detroit to Yemen, and he was carrying with him a phone book of all odd things, and inside the phone book was some explosives, and he claimed that he did not know that they were there. Now, he was put in prison because they were actually explosive materials.
I mean, how could you very well be carrying a phone book and not know there are explosives in it? That's a pretty, pretty slim excuse.
Yes, and his lawyer's response was that he did not know that they were there.
Well, anyway, of course, I think that there really are some very dangerous things that are going on. Do you think he was trying to blow up the plane, or what do you think he had in mind?
Well, it's hard to speculate, but what I talk about a lot and write about a lot is the idea that many counterterrorism agents present to me, and of course I have direct experience in this venue as well, but that terrorists, terror cells, terror sympathizers, work in small groups and also in larger groups to test our aviation system. And so the information, whether it's how to get a weapon on board a plane, whether or not you can successfully hide explosives in, say, a phone book or in the armrest of a plane, as happened in France a few years ago, whether or not you can leave a switchblade on a seat during a cleaning crew, all of these examples I document and I report on.
All right, you hold that thought right there. We're going to be back in just a moment with Annie Jacobson, author of Terror in the Skies. Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case it's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
Is your child disrespectful, defiant, or obnoxious? Does everything turn into an argument with your kid? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman. I'll help you turn your child's behavior around right now with the Total Transformation.
After the Total Transformation, there's no more arguing, no more lecturing, no more back-talking. Now when I ask him to do something, he does it.
We've learned verbiage from the Total Transformation Program, and it's almost like magic. If you say those words, they stop arguing.
Defiance, back-talking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. The Total Transformation will help you solve even the worst behavior problems. I guarantee your child will listen to you again, and you get peace and sanity back in your home.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-373-0402. 1-800-373-0402. Call now. 1-800-373-0402. 1-800-373-0402.
People who use Cartabite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartabite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartabite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartabite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for a regular job a few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at www.heartdrop.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. And, of course, our guest this afternoon is Annie Jacobson. We're talking to Annie about this whole concept of airline safety. And one of the things we were talking about is the fact that 60 Minutes recently had a series of interviews dealing with the so-called terror watch list that they have at airports. And I think they spent something like $150 million on this watch list. It contains the names of 14 of the 19 hijackers who are all dead, I mean, why would you have the names of 14 dead hijackers on the list there? And when, of course, they were asked, you know, people from the government, well, you know, why are these names there? They said, well, of course, lots of people have the same names. So they pointed out, yes, but not exactly the same birth date. 14 people with the same birth date and the names as the hijackers. I mean, well, why don't you pick them and tell the story, Annie?
Well, you know, there's just so many problems with the no-fly list. That was reported, and of course they have, the no-fly list has 100 people named Robert Johnson, so if you're a United States citizen and you're going to have the name Robert Johnson, you're guaranteed to be hassled at the airport. And yet at the same time, some of the world's most loathsome terrorists are not on the list because, according to the 60 Minutes report, the United States government does not want to tip the hand of foreign nationals that we know who exactly the world's worst terrorists are, which means that these folks can get on a plane. And so it shows right there that the whole system really is broken and it must be fixed. But what I found most fascinating about the notion that these 14 dead hijackers were on the list wasn't that they were on the list, was the fact that the woman in charge of the list didn't herself understand why they were on the list and couldn't explain it to the American public. I mean, often ignorance is a far greater crime than anything else. I mean, if you're going to be in charge of that list, you should know why those names are on there, and I'll tell you why. For example, there's a Philippine terrorist group named Abu Sayyaf. And just about every time they commit a terrorist attack, they usually blow up ferries throughout the Philippines. They have an agent who goes on, for example, in this one situation in 2004, they went on board with a bomb, and the passenger registers under a specific name. And it's kind of the Filipino equivalent of John Smith. And every time they commit a terrorist attack, they use that same name. Which is a case, and that person has long since been dead. That person was actually a martyr from the Afghanistan War. But what's interesting is her point should have been that terrorists may, in fact, take the name, remember they use aliases all the time, they may take that name and use it in a kind of, you know, ironic, we're smarter than you are cat and mouse game with intelligence agencies in the United States. And that is why you might choose to keep certain names on the list. But, of course, that woman had absolutely no idea about that reality whatsoever. Her answer was simply, you know, they're on there because they might be dangerous.
And, of course, the reply was, yes, but they're all dead. So anyway,
exactly.
If you're not going to put the serious terrorists on the list, those who might blow up planes, and you're going to put a lot of people's names on there who are dead or who are not going to blow up planes, it doesn't really seem that the list does much of any good.
The list doesn't do any good, and as you pointed out, it was $144 million that has been spent. But I would like to remind you that that was not having anything to do with the creation of that list, which we can only imagine how much cost our government, cost the taxpayers. That $144 million was the amount of money that has been spent maintaining the list over the past 3 years. And what we learned in the 60 Minutes program is that it hasn't been maintained at all. It has not changed from its original creation. So what on earth was that money spent for? Besides perhaps the people going out to lunch that say they're supposedly maintaining the list.
And, of course, one of another thing that really bothers me as far as airline safety is concerned is the fact that they will not allow racial profiling. Now, ordinarily, I would be very much against racial profiling, but if we are really at war with terrorists and the lives of millions of Americans are at stake, I would think that even people who are of Muslim or Islamic origin would be very, very glad to know they were going to be on a plane that would be safe from other radicals there. And I would think that people who would certainly would not be offended. And instead of considering everybody as a terrorist, well, you ought to maybe perhaps do a little something logical to try to really protect the people on the planes.
Well, absolutely. And although I'm for profiling, I never like to use an adjective before the word profiling. If I had to choose an adjective, I would say, let's call it behavior profiling.
All right, fine. You can call it what you want to, but talking about it, but it's only logical.
But let me tell you why. I think there's a good argument for this from the law enforcement agents that I speak to on a regular basis, and they're always reminding me, Annie, profiling is really criminal profiling. And someone's race is simply an indicator of a criminal that we are looking for. And when you think of it that way, it takes out of the equation this any idea of racism, which is absurd, and it says, who are the criminals committing the terrorist attacks, and what are their indicators? And then when we can think of race as perhaps an indicator, the same way that we might see Islamic fundamentalism as an indicator, then our law enforcement agencies can begin to work based on facts, not on fiction.
All right. Well, I think that this is something very, very real. And then, of course, another thing that really disturbs me, and I know you probably talked to some of the pilots, and that is if we're really concerned about the danger of is hijacking of our planes, you would think that they would want to have the pilots armed, and certainly they've done everything they could to make it so difficult that even many of the pilots have actually taken the extensive training at their own expense, aren't bothering to carry guns. What's the attitude of the pilots towards the way they're being treated as far as wanting to be armed to protect the people on their planes?
Well, most of the pilots that I speak to want to be armed. And, you know, I would definitely defer to the pilots in this situation because they're the ones flying the plane. I mean, they're essentially the captain of the ship. And it's the safety of those on board that they're in place to protect. And so when you see this idea of, you know, pilots, the bureaucratic infighting about whether or not pilots should be armed, it points directly to the problems of bureaucracy. And of course, it comes down to money and control when it comes to arming pilots. The Federal Air Marshal Service perhaps doesn't want the pilots armed because it takes away from their budget because they have the armed guys on the plane. And that's just one example of the kind of fighting that you see. But if you try to look to a solution, as I do, and you say, do pilots want to be armed? And the answer is, yes, they do. Then the real question to ask is, move through the bureaucracy and make it happen.
Yes, but of course, if they go through the bureaucracy and they have to go down there, wherever it is, down by Roslyn, New Mexico or something there at their own expense, and take the extensive training, which is ridiculous, and then, of course, once they have the training, if they actually carry a gun on board the plane, it has to be in a lockbox. It cannot be taken out of the lockbox except when it wouldn't do any good, and it has to be put back into the lockbox when it might protect both the pilot and the passengers. In other words, if the pilot's going to get up and go to the bathroom and unlock the door, that's when he would be susceptible to an attack, and that's when they have to lock the gun up again. That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense, and further adding to the disturbing idea of that is that I speak to air marshals who report on examples of what are called probes inside the world of aviation security, and that is Middle Eastern men sitting in first class with a pen and a notebook writing down the times that pilots come out of the cockpit to go to the bathroom to try and establish some kind of a pattern. That is very disturbing. And if you couple that with the idea that that's the only time that the pilot can't have his gun, you have a potential disaster waiting to happen.
Amen to that. Well, anyway, of course, then what about the air marshals? My understanding is there's a lot of poor morale among the air marshals. They've been really given a very, very bad time by the administrators who control them, and there's so much that they could do to protect the passengers. They're not allowed to, and they've made their life pretty miserable for them, haven't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, if there's anything that I would say I specialize in reporting on, it's certainly the Federal Air Marshal Service. I've done so for 2.5 years now, and many of the marshals often joke with me because I've asked to have a debate with the air marshal director several times, and I will continue to do so. I'm always declined. And they often tell me, well, Annie, your opening line to the director could be, you know, director, with all due respect, I have spoken to more air marshals than you have. Because the truth of the matter is, according to the marshals I speak with, and I have 100 as sources, is that there is a great divide between the bureaucracy in the Federal Air Marshal Service and the rank and file men, and if you can, men and women. And if you can imagine this as one example of what is going on in Department of Homeland Security, it is a very disturbing portrait of a lot of money being spent at the top and not a lot of services at the bottom. You've got rank and file federal air marshals who want to keep you and your family safe when you fly, who want to do their job. But you've got these policies coming out of upper management that hamstring the marshals from doing their job. And again, it always points back to money, power, and control in the bureaucracies making the decisions. And this is a great tragedy because the desire by the marshals is there, and the budgets are certainly there. I mean, look no further than the new Homeland Security budget that was just released a few weeks ago, $42.7 billion, up 6% from last year. Those are big budgets, and where is that money going?
That's an excellent, excellent question, because, well, as I will say that I do not believe the majority of our planes have air marshals on them, but that's classified, so I don't dare tell you what I really know to be true. After all, I could get in trouble by telling you the truth. Are the air marshals still required to wear a suit and tie and white shirt, or can they look like anybody else so that they can't be picked out? And hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Annie Jacobson. Her book, Terror in the Skies, and it's available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927.
America Discount Home Medical Equipment sells at discount prices. We sell wheelchairs, oxygen equipment, hospital beds, commodes, fast safety products, walkers, and other items needed for the care of your loved one at home. Our phone number is 1-800-956-6616. We sell at one half of retail price or less. We have free shipping and no sales tax for any shipment outside of California. You can expect to receive the item within 7 days. Our website address is www.home-med-equip.com. Again, our phone number is 1-800-956-6616.
Currency devaluation, inflation, one and the same. If you had deposited $100,000 in a bank at 1% in a 30-month period dating from May 24, 2005, here is what happened to your funds. The dollar lost 33% of its value in that time frame. The bank paid you 1%. Your $100,000 now has a net purchasing power of $68,000. Here is reality. The devaluation of currency equals real inflation. Keep in mind how the value of your paper assets are measured in dollars. Gold in the same time frame increased 35% in value. Learn how to protect and profit in this truly unstable world economy. Call Midas Resources at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonance. If the resonant frequency force making the glass vibrate is big enough, the size of the vibration will become so large that the glass shatters. Using a similar principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest easiest-to-operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Simple, step-by-step instructions using pictures are easy to follow. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms. Eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free. 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. 1-866-885-6625.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it was saying that fortunately, you know, they have finally, as of September of this year, 2006, changed the dress code for the air marshals so that they don't have to, you know, be there, so that any half-respecting terrorists would know who they were. So at least they can at least maintain as that they're undercover. But many of the marshals have actually gone to Congress or spoken publicly about the very real problems within the air marshal service, and even though it's against the law to retaliate against them, they retaliate against them. And Arnie was saying that so many of the air marshals who come forward to tell the truth and point out that the lives of the American people are being endangered are answering telephones, cleaning the latrines, painting walls, and you pick up the story, Arnie.
Well, yes, it's one air marshal in particular that I interviewed the other day, and as I was saying, he protected the president. He protected three presidents, and was so close to the president at times that his resume is on file with the Senate Armed Forces Committee because of the situations he's been in. And yet, here is a guy who, after 9/11, a call to arms, wanted to work for the Federal Air Marshal Service, felt he would be protecting the people in a greater capacity, and had a problem, a medical problem, something that is just being unveiled with the Federal Air Marshal Service as being a major problem. So many air marshals are being asked to fly so many missions that they are actually experiencing serious physical problems. Why are they being asked to fly so many missions? Because their colleagues are on administrative duty for speaking up about things. I mean, we are talking about an endemic problem. And this one air marshal in particular, with his six-figure salary, was in the bathroom cleaning the latrines of the Chicago field office.
Well, you know, of course, the great tragedy about this entire situation, you know, is that, you know, when you can't come out and you can't be critical and you can't point out that people's lives could be potentially in danger and you're going to be punished because you tell the truth, pretty soon, well, it just most people would rather go along and get along. And I really think it's a tragic situation. I'm glad that they're coming forward and that you're getting this information out across America through your radio interviews so that people can begin to understand that perhaps we're not as safe as we like to think we are.
Well, absolutely. And it's not just about it's by no means about making people afraid. It's about people holding the government accountable for what they say they are doing. If the government is saying, we are making you safe, I think that's terrific if they really are. But if the government knows that it has extremely dangerous policies in place, ones that the United States citizens will not find out about because of the classified nature of almost everything going on inside Department of Homeland Security, then that is a travesty. You know, last time I was on your show, we talked about some of my interviews with the old Red Team special agents, and those were the Air Marshal elite teams from before 9/11 who would travel the world and look for aviation security weaknesses. And since 9/11, these FAA agents have been absolutely outspoken critics of the TSA for some of the problems that are going on, the same problems that they were warning people about before 9/11. And there was a fascinating article in the Star Ledger out of Newark today, because last week the Transportation Security Administration, everyone knows it as the TSA, they had their red team conduct a series of covert tests at the Newark airport, and 20 out of 22 security tests failed. There were situations where agents could bring fake bombs and weapons on their bodies, disguised as, for example, in one situation, was disguised as a leg bandage. You know, they use some creative means, but these are the tests that are being put in place. And the TSA is consistently failing. What I find most disturbing is instead of addressing the problems and saying we're working to remedy things, they take this approach, which is that the people are wrong, somehow the test was failed. I mean, for example, you know, one TSA official was quoted as saying, test results are not a grade or a scorecard. Well, what else are they?
You'll get a joke. You'll get certainly a laugh out of that one, because this whole thing is so ridiculous. And, of course, one of the things you pointed out is that the air marshals really want it time, you know, before people get on the plane, so they can look at them and look at the people and maybe do a little screening of the people who are going to be on the plane and try to get a feeling that there's something there that or somebody there they ought to be concerned about. And they're not allowed to do that. They're not allowed to really do any observation before they go on the plane, are they?
Absolutely not. They've had their time before missions cut down dramatically, to the point where one air marshal told me the other day on an interview, Annie, if my shoe is untied, I barely have time to tie it before I get on the flight.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Annie Jacobson here at Radio Liberty.
Order a copy of this show for your friends and family at GCNLive.com or call 877-300-7645.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes Scholarship, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Do you know the secret to reading 1,000% faster? That's right, the secret that could allow you to read 10 books in the time it takes others to read one. Hi, I'm Steve Glick, CEO of Infinite Mind. I'd like to send you a free demo of this secret, developed by a leading expert in brain function. Experience with this free demo the secret to reading 1,000% faster. Call now to try this demo absolutely free. Imagine how reading 10 times faster could help your whole family. Kids do better in school, teens can actually score higher on their college entrance exams, and busy adults can gain that ever-important edge at work. This free demo is only available for a limited time. Call now. Just think how reading 10 times faster could improve your life and the life of your family.
Call now to try this demo absolutely free. Dial 1-800-403-7311. That's 1-800-403-7311. 1-800-403-7311.
Hey folks, Alex Jones here with an important question. When was the last time you used Pure Soap? I mean the hard-to-find kind that's all natural and not full of corrosive toxins and chemicals and detergents that just dry out your skin and have been connected to very serious health problems. Let me tell you something about the Calvin Pure Soap Company. There's a 100% unconditional guarantee on all their wonderful products. They're all natural, they're triple concentrated, they're factory direct, factory owned, and operated since 1947. Earth-free Pure soaps for bathing, laundry, and kitchen. Try Pure Soap once and I'll guarantee you'll never use anything else. Now for the first time, Calvin Pure Soap is available factory direct to you and your family. Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Call today for a Calvin Soap catalog at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091 or on the web at calvinpuresoap.com.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Andy was just talking about a gentleman who worked for the air marshals, and of course he had been a whistleblower and come forward, and he was being retaliated against. He had actually gone through the legal system, and the air marshal service had been ordered to pay him all of his back pay. And they were given 30 days to do it, and they just refuse to do it. And this man has been forced, because he has to support his family, to go to Iraq to take a job, potentially dangerous job, as a security guard over there, because the government refuses to abide by the law. And when we have people in government who refuse to abide by the law, why, we really have a lawless society. This must be terribly frustrating for you. I know it is for me, as I hear you tell the story.
It's terribly frustrating, you know, and this particular air marshal I'm talking about is represented by, you know, none less than David Shippers, who, if that name rings a bell...
Hi, we've interviewed David a number of times.
And, you know, and Dave and I have had long, lengthy conversations about this individual, because he, too, is outraged. Here's a man who was the lead judiciary committee to on an impeachment trial for a president of the United States. You would think that in a federal judicial system, they would, you know, take his word and follow through with what they were going supposed to do for no other reason than perhaps the press might be involved, which is not to say that any lawyer representing any federal agent doesn't have the same and shouldn't have the same effect on, you know, to promote law. But the fact that Shippers represents this air marshal, he's confounded by the fact that they haven't paid. And yet nothing is done. And this is an absolute, wildly abusive power going on in the executive branch of the government. And this is what I write about at great length. And I feel extremely strong about being an advocate in this department. Because if our executive power takes more and more and more control, then we really begin to see the loss of personal freedom.
Well, I share your concern, and I think we are seeing the progressive loss of personal freedom really more dramatically in this last year or so than I've ever seen in all the 44 years I've been involved studying what's going on.
Well, it also shocks me how these issues are confused. For example, going back to the no-fly list, people say, well, you know, our personal, if we racial profile, our personal freedoms are being trampled upon. But really, the much bigger issue of the personal freedoms has to do with abuse of executive power. And the big issues of personal freedoms have to do with the no-fly list, Robert Johnson being subjected to a, you know, head-to-heel search every time he tries to board a plane, while Abu Sayyaf can get on a plane because no one wants to tip the hand of the Pakistani government.
Sometimes I think we live in a world gone mad, and other times I'm absolutely certain of it. Well, you know, certainly what's going on with the air marshals is a serious problem. Another thing that really bothers me is that so much is being made of the danger of somebody putting a bomb on the plane or on any one of our planes, and yet the cargo and even much of the passenger baggage that is shipped through, not that we carry on board, but it's actually shipped through. A lot of that is not checked, and very little of the cargo put on the planes is shipped. And you might not even know which plane was going to go down, but you put a bomb on there, and chances are that, you know, you would have a pretty good chance it would go off when the plane was in flight. Or anyway, they ought to be checking the baggage for bombs, but they don't seem to be doing that.
Well, I think what you're pointing out is that we're really just at the tip of the iceberg. And for as long as we continue to stay behind the terrorists, in other words, the TSA will wait until a bomb goes off, and you may quote me on this, the TSA will wait until a bomb goes off because it was put in the cargo hold of a plane to begin checking cargo holds of planes, because that is the way the TSA works. Until there is what they perceive as a real threat, i.e. bodies falling out of the sky, they don't act. And the best example I can think of that is my recent tour to Los Angeles Airport out here, where I met with a federal security detector, and I was taken, the federal security director, every airport has one, called the FSD. I was taken on a tour of all the bomb detection technology. For example, each one of those machines that your bag goes through to scan it costs $1 million. Los Angeles Airport alone has 64. All this money being spent on this bomb detection equipment. And I said to the FSD, when did you begin to do this? And she said, a few weeks after the bombs blew up in Russia. You remember the simultaneous female suicide bombers that blew up two different planes over Russian airspace at the same time in the summer of 2004. once those bodies were falling from the sky, the TSA said, now we better start having better bomb detection technology. That was 3.5 years after 9/11.
Well, I really feel very, very strongly that we're certainly, if there really is an Islamic terrorist threat, we're not doing a very good job to counter it, despite the over $40 billion a year that has been putting out there. So, anyway, of course, what are some of the other issues that you really think are important that you'd like to bring to our listeners today?
You know, I think one of the biggest issues that speaks to me out of all of this writing, you know, I wrote my first book, Terror in the Skies. I've written a second book, which is going to be published sometime in the near future. I'm working on a third book. And it all, you know, all the facts and figures and the reporting and the interviews and the articles and the texts and the congressional reports and the reports by the Inspector General, you know, you can read a million documents until the cows come home. And really what it comes down to is always this, it's attitude. I find two different kinds of attitude in the field. I find the courageous, enthusiastic, rank and file federal worker who really wants to keep America safe, who believes in this country, and who follows the law. And then I find the ignorant, lazy, corrupt government official, usually in a management position or a spokesman position, who insists on telling us, you and I joke about this at length, 2 + 2 = 5, and hopes that we are as ignorant as they are and will actually believe them. Because as I said, remember the words of the TSA official just the other day, test results are not a grade. Well, you know, if I told my 6-year-old son when he came home from school today, if he told me he failed his test, and I said, don't worry, test results are not a grade, I mean, his teacher would think I was crazy. And yet this is the kind of attitude that we are finding in our own federal government that looks a lot more and more like third world attitudes of corrupt dictatorships, which is the subject of my third book.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I don't know if you've ever flown on El Al, but I think that's the Israeli airline, but they face a real terrorist threat, and they really go over everything. They profile you before you get on. They go through your baggage like you've never seen, and they don't even allow the pilots to go through the cockpit door. They got to get in from outside, so there is no cockpit door to break into. They're really serious about trying to prevent Islamic terrorism, and they haven't lost any planes, to my knowledge. They've done a magnificent job.
In 36 years. Well, that's because they know how to do their job. They take it seriously, and it's not all for show. You know, they have a security director for each flight, and there is one man or woman who is in charge of that flight. And it is, and the whole ship rests on that person's shoulders. And that individual will not let the flight go until they are personally willing to be responsible for all the lives. And that has to do with the cargo, that has to do with the passengers, that has to do with all the carry-on baggage. And the best example I can think of how El Al works, When I was watching CNN the other day, there's a new host on their headline news called Glenn Beck, and he talked about flying on El Al recently. And for some reason, he went through their secondary screening procedure. So he ended up being questioned for 3.5 hours before he got on the flight. He said they even asked him who he voted for in the last election, which is, you know, very interesting. Can you imagine that in the United States? Anyways, he goes through 3.5 hours worth of questioning, and then he sits down, and the flight attendant comes up to him and hands him a steak knife to cut his steak with for dinner, a very sharp steak knife. The point being is that no one was on that plane who was a threat.
Yes, you know, I rather think that the person who's in charge usually is on the plane as well, and they know that it's their life that is on the line. So they're not going to take a chance on, of course, anybody beyond that plane, and they don't want to lose their life. So, you know, in fact, I'll never forget one time I was getting on a plane, and we had this great big, it almost looked like a bazooka. It was basically a camera stand, and we were taking some professional things. And boy, the guards there saw that. You know, they went through that from one end to the other. Nothing got by them.
You bet. Well, I'll tell you a tragic story. I interviewed, and I write about this gentleman in my first book. The airport ticket agent who checked in two of the 9/11 hijackers that hijacked the plane and flew it into the Pentagon. And I call him Mr. Jones to maintain his anonymity. He contacted me after some of the writing that I had been doing. And he's mentioned in the 9/11 commission report because he's the only ticket agent that was not comfortable with the folks that he checked in. They were two hijackers. And he specifically asked for more security screening procedures to be applied to them. And at that time, all that meant was that the Al-Hazmi brothers could not get on Flight 77 without their carry-ons. That is all that that meant. But he was the ticket agent who pushed that little button that you're not supposed to know exists because maybe the airlines would get in trouble for racial profiling or some kind of profiling. He did not like the way those men acted. And what he told me in our interview was that he looked at them, sized them up, he looked at their tickets. They were $3,000 tickets, one-way tickets to Los Angeles, which had been paid for in cash. And he looked at the men, and he noticed that they wore cheap shoes. And he thought to himself, why are these men spending so much money on a plane ticket when they can't afford a pair of shoes? And it didn't make him comfortable. And he had 27 years of experience with the airline, looking at people, because he acted like one of those Al agents, and he told me I never wanted to be somebody who had to watch a plane go down. And he won awards, and he won a certificate from the FAA for his amazing behavior, and he was nicknamed the detective. And now for the rest of his life, he carries that great burden of having been, in his eyes, the man who could have stopped 9/11, at least one of the planes.
Well, he did his best, but unfortunately, apparently about nine of the hijackers were actually stopped that morning, and many of them, of course, were actually on terrorist list, that terrorist list which we have today. You know, had all those people, you know, they were just accumulated. They simply took all the material from the government. The government knew about these 14 people, and that's why they put their names on this terrorist list.
Well, that's absolutely right, and that's what I told Mr. Jones, the man I was just discussing. When he told me that great burden he bears, I asked him, I said, are you aware of how many opportunities the United States government had to stop specifically one of those two men that he checked in, Nawaf al-Hazmi? He did not know, and I then put together a list for him, which I include in my book, and it's called 22 Opportunities the United States Government Had to Stop 9/11 But Missed, specifically with that one man, because he was on the CIA's watch list. He was in the FBI's scopes, but they didn't communicate the information, and they didn't share the information with the airlines. And that man got on that plane, despite the fact that part of the United States government knew he was a terrorist.
But you know, the most frightening thing about this whole thing, Annie, is nobody was ever fired. Nobody was ever demoted for, you know, their dereliction of duty that led to the death of almost 3,000 Americans. In fact, many of the people who were primarily responsible within the FBI and the CIA for what happened, they were promoted. And
I
you
write
have
about
to ask yourself why.
Absolutely, and that there, it just speaks to careerism and bureaucracy. Promote the guys who are promoting the bureaucratic system, and demote the hardworking agents who are actually doing their job. I can think of no better example than FBI Special Agent Harry Salmon, the man who arrested Zacharias Moussaoui, the man who was so desperate to get into Moussaoui's car, into his hotel room so that he could access the information on his computer, that he desperately tried to get a search warrant from his boss, a bureaucrat named Michael Rolstein. Well, Harry Sandit was denied his search warrant. Michael Rolstein got a promotion, and Harry Sandit remains a special agent with the Minnesota field office of the FBI today. And when you try to interview him, his minders say, sorry, Harry doesn't do interviews.
Well, I think what I'd heard, he had tried 70 times 70 times, actually, to, you know, get permission to go ahead and either get into the laptop computer or do what was needed, and 70 times he was turned down. How could you turn down somebody that many times? None of this really makes sense.
Well, you know, the most disturbing quote of all was one of his bosses said to him, and it's a quote that he gave at the Moussaoui trial, and anyone who wants to read about this can simply Google the transcripts of Harry Samet from the Moussaoui trial and read for yourself, because under oath, Samet was able to testify about the truth. And the truth was, as he kept pushing for this search warrant, he was told by his boss, look, pushing for this kind of a search warrant is exactly what gets FBI agents in trouble.
That's what gets you in trouble. In other words, it was almost a veiled threat, wasn't it?
Absolutely. It was saying you're going to lose your job if you keep asking.
And, of course, there was a great deal of evidence, of course, that they... well, we won't get into the other aspects, but I will tell you, I personally talked to the woman who runs the Norman Air School in Norman, Oklahoma. And she told me that 12 days before the 9/11 attack, the FBI was there asking about Moussaoui, and we've been told over and over again they couldn't connect the dots. They had no idea that he was a terrorist. Why then, 10 or 11 days before the 9/11 attack, were they at the Norman Flight School in Norman, Oklahoma, and why has that never been brought up by the media? That's a good sort of thing you could follow up on, Annie, and get that information out. You could probably do it better than I could.
You know, I actually have done some work on Norman, Oklahoma, and I've written an article which you can read on womanswallstreet.com, and it's called How Normal is Norman?
Now, well, let's go ahead and get your webpage out once again. And, of course, we do carry the book, but how can people get to your website?
My regular aviation column appears at womanswallstreet.com.
Womanswallstreet.com, okay. And, of course, and will they be able to get your regular articles? Do you have a great deal of information up there?
That's where I have 20-some-odd articles on aviation security.
All right, fine. Well, let me recommend that you get Annie's information. If you'll just hang on for just a couple of minutes, we have a short time, and then I'll let you go. But right now, our guest has been Annie Jacobson, her book, Terror in the Skies. And as you listen to this program and you want to tear your hair out, don't do that. Get informed and help Annie and I get the truth out.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Hey, want to know a natural healing treatment that's been around for thousands of years? Salt products. Now Soleil Wellness brings these natural healing products to your home. Easy to use, non-toxic, and 100% natural, these products help to give you great physical, mental, and spiritual results. Heated salt pillows for earaches and back pain, salt pipes to relieve respiratory ailments, bath salts release toxins as they soften and rehydrate the skin. Pretty salt lamps to ionize the air and reduce EMF radiation. So many different salt products available for you. It's time to let the secret out. Visit Soleil Wellness at natural-salt-lamps.com. That's natural-salt-lamps.com. Or call 312-224-2710. That's 312-224-2710. Mention GCN Live for a free gift.
According to a recent report by the National Institute of Health, high blood pressure is a major risk factor for heart disease and the chief risk factor for stroke and heart failure. It affects about 50 million Americans. That's one in four adults. Because many people have high blood pressure for years without knowing it,
The American Heart Association calls it the silent killer. At researchedherbs.com, we recognize your concern for your well-being. As your online partner in health, we are committed to empowering you with the resources you need to make informed health decisions about high blood pressure. Visit us online at researchedherbs.com to learn more about heart care, the widely researched natural herbal supplement for regulating blood pressure and maintaining optimum heart health. Did you know that the safety and effectiveness of heart care is backed by over 100 clinical trials and experimental studies? Act now. Visit us online at researchedherbs.com or call us at 1-800-845-3841 to start protecting yourself from the silent killer. That's
1-800-845-3841. Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we do hope many of you will... Remember, the Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we depend upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every single day on about 60 different outlets every week. Now, a lot of them, of course, we're only on for half an hour a week. Some of our, here in California, some of our biggest stations, you know, are only half an hour a week, but other stations we're on every single day. And people are beginning to learn, and then through the miracle of shortwave and internet, and now, of course, we're on satellite 9 hours a day, why people who have never heard the truth before are beginning to hear it. So if you'd like, of course, to know more about our ministry, go to radioliberty.com. You can learn about Telstar 5, a great satellite, and you can listen to Joyce Riley and myself and Pastor Butch Paw and Pastor Chuck Chrismeyer there. As I say, you know, 24 hours a day. You can only hear us 9 hours a day, but what we're really suggesting is take the opportunity, spend a few hours a day or an hour a day, and we'll try to keep you abreast of what's really going on, because believe me, you're not getting the truth through the media. It is controlled. So many of even the more enjoyable programs, and many that I enjoy watching, but I realize they're using them to plant ideas in our minds and control our reality and control our sense of what's right and wrong, and gradually alter our position, and specifically our moral position, because there really is a conspiracy against God, and there really is a conspiracy against the maintenance of our freedom. There are people who have an entirely different worldview. They want to create a one world government and a one world religion. And the only way to do that is to destroy the United States of America. If you doubt that, you want to know who these people are, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to read a book that was written in 1966 by Bill Clinton's mentor, President Clinton's mentor, a man named Professor Carroll Quigley, one of the most eminent historians of another generation. And in his book, Tragedy and Hope, 1,342 pages, he will tell you about a secret society that he spent many years studying, 20 years studying, and he was totally in favor of what they were doing. The only disagreement was they wanted to remain secret, and he thought everybody should understand how wonderful and benevolent these wealthy and powerful men were, and how noble their goal was to bring the kingdom of God to earth without God. This is the most amazing story. Of course, Professor Quigley never understood the spiritual implications of what he had uncovered. You can buy Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, through Radio Liberty, and you read it through about three times. You'll know more than most college professors. And you can get it by itself, or the Professor Quigley special, or the Tragedy and Hope special, which includes the book, Tragedy and Hope, the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which has been suppressed for many years, and, of course, the interview with Professor Carroll Quigley. And I think you'll find it fascinating as you hear him talk about how his book was suppressed and about the emblem on the back of the dollar bill and his total disdain for people like you and I, because he was a member of the elite. And he really believed that this noblesse oblige, we need a ruling elite to take care of us common people, because he didn't believe in our Constitution. And he sure didn't believe in God. And what a tragic end it was for a brilliant man, who, of course, in the final analysis, as he grew old, you know, really had nothing to cling to and no beliefs at all. other than his brilliance. And, of course, his brilliance began to fade, as it does with so many people as they grow old. So, under any circumstances, Tragedy and Hope, one of the great books, it was suppressed very effectively for many years because Macmillan, the publisher, was actually purchased, and they destroyed the plates of the first half of the book so it couldn't be reprinted. There are stories out there they don't want you to learn. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Get Tragedy and Hope, the Tragedy and Hope Special, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, Terror in the Skies, or so many other things that are available from Radio Liberty. But please pray for our provision and our protection.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonance. If the resonant frequency force making the glass vibrate is big enough, the size of the vibration will become so large that the glass shatters. Using a similar principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that diseased organisms can be destroyed using different
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
With news on the Information Radio Network, I'm Laura Lee Shull. The White House is denying Vice President Cheney endorsed a technique called waterboarding when he said dunking terror suspects in water during questioning is a no-brainer. Mark Smith is at the White House.
Press Secretary Tony Snow says Cheney was simply not talking about waterboarding, an interrogation method that simulates drowning, and he certainly wasn't confirming to a radio interviewer that America uses any kind of torture in the war on terror.
No-brainer number one is we don't torture. No-brainer number two, we don't break the law.
Snow says he understands why some have leapt to the mistaken conclusion Cheney was agreeing with waterboarding if it would save American lives. However, the spokesman refused to say what other dunking technique Cheney might have had in mind. Mark Smith at the White House.
No record highs for the first time this week as stocks closed down 73 points. You're listening to the Information.